Hey, welcome back to the Rhetoric Warriors podcast. As always, we are here checking out highly designed messages for the world, learning about rhetoric, so on and so forth. And I'm Dr. Dan, comedian and rhetorician. I do both.
Rhetorician. I like that.
Everybody wants to add a T to it. They call it rhetorician when they see it.
Okay.
But there's no, it's just rhetorician.
Is this a word you made up?
What's that?
This is a word you made up?
No. That's a real word.
Okay.
It's somebody who studies and does rhetoric.
I didn't even know that was a thing. That's great.
I know, right? Got our own word. This is a new channel. This is a new feature. I'll figure out what to call it exactly. Within the Rhetoric Warriors podcast, I do three things. I talk to comedians. I convert conservatives. And I interview persuasion and rhetoric pros. So within that, this is the comedy part, and I wanted to do some stuff. I've been doing comedy pros of getting people to talk about their careers, but I want to hear these guys because they're my favorite comedians, and I want it to be about social issues and politics. So this feature is called Comedians with Issues for now. If we come up with a better title, we'll change it.
Okay.
And I'm going to go back and grab all the guys that I talked about their careers, and we're going to do social issue and political comedy. We're starting off right here with my very first guest on the Rhetoric Warriors podcast, comedian Tom Simmons, hanging out there in Greensboro,
North Carolina. It's the capital of show business. I don't know if you've heard of it. Come on.
What?
It's the capital of show business. I don't know if you've heard.
Yeah, it's right up there. It's right next to Hollywood. A little bit of, they got a stretch for the annex. So real quick, Tom, longtime road dog comedian, also an issue comedian, like does issues on the road, which makes you a rare breed of road dog.
Yeah, I think it used to. And I think now, not so much. I think that there's a lot of it in comedy now. And I'm not saying there's a lot of it that's being done well. And I'm not saying I do it well or they, you know, whatever. But it's hard to do, I think.
It has. Like, I think Trump breaking open politics and social issue stuff becoming so dominant, just it also infused it up into stand-up, right? You almost have to talk about that stuff.
Right. But what happens is, like, my friend Jeff Tate, a comedian in Cincinnati, once said,
by the way. I like that guy.
He's uniquely funny and just, and great offstage too. But he was talking about one of the funniest thing is for 3 weeks after Doug Stanhope would come to town. He told me this like 10 years ago. And it's just because then everybody wants to talk about their thing, their social issue, their thing, you know? And obviously it takes a lot of work to get to where you can do it well. So it would be fun for them to watch for 3 weeks as they
That was the Houston scene when Kinison and Hicks came through there. Like all those guys in the posse, you know, trying to come up behind them and sort of do that same kind of, you know, find a cultural strand to just, you know, pluck that cord again and again. And they just didn't have the brain power to do it the way those two guys did.
Yeah. They unique. And I, you know, and Bill to me did a good job of mixing in like just jokes.
Yeah.
And puns.
Plenty of jokes.
Flips on words. And you know what I mean? And so those made it, those are what made it okay to do the other stuff in my opinion.
Yeah. You know? So what's your approach?
Memorial Day, right?
Talk about.
Huh? So I made a little list cause I knew I was coming on and so we can go through these if you want. Like,
yeah.
Cause I always think of social issues as being like, as opposed to politics, they repeat themselves. You know what I'm saying? It's always, there's always a white cop kills black guy, you know, white girl missing, Israel, Palestine. So it's like, so the ones that are back sort of in the mindset are Israel, Palestine, abortion in Texas, right? Cause they're making it so that you can't basically, like if you're a pregnant woman in Texas, you are up a creek without a paddle. You can no longer row or wade. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how you are.
Man. Oh, it's hard. Good joke.
So abortion is a weird one too, right? Because it's one of those issues. And I don't know how this, you canceled to talk about this in rhetoric is that there's just seems to be two sides of the debate. There's no middle ground, right? So you have to be on one side or the other. And I'm like this with guns and things like abortion where, to me, I'm on both sides of that debate in a way, you know what I mean? Because I agree with liberals that it's too complicated and personal issue to let the government decide for a woman. And I agree with conservative that at some point that's a life, you just can't end it because it's inconvenient for you. I mean, what if you don't like old people? You know what I mean? And you're like, oh my God, this is a really bad time for me to be having a grandma. You know what I mean? I got a heavy course load this semester. I got to do something about this. So, you know.
Yeah, it's an age issue, right? Really? Like if you're before 9 months, like that age is, yeah, you watch out. It's fair game. You're in the hunting zone, but anytime, any age after that, like, yeah, there's no age where you lose that, you know, the hunting license starts up again.
They seem to be in a battle to make it to states like Texas and Oklahoma and whatever. They just seem to be in this kind of, we're going to make ours more strict and ours more strict and ours more strict. And, you know, Oklahoma passed one that was like a heartbeat one or another version of ridiculous, where even the pro-life, even the pro-life governor was like, we can't, this is unconstitutional. And it's an insult to women and fetuses. Like, what? Okay, I'm with. How do you insult a fetus? Is that possible? Like, it gets me thinking. Like fetuses are having like a, yo mama's so broke she can't afford to not be your mama. You know what I mean? Your mama is so dumb. She. Your mama's what? I don't even. You know, your mama doesn't even know how to use birth control. Whatever it is, you know. your mama's so broke she can't afford to get your daddy to drive to Arkansas. I just think that this is going to lead to, I don't know how Texas is doing, if there's other parts of Texas that are still allowing it and working with Planned Parenthood or whatever, but it just, I picture like a fireworks stand at the border, but like, come on down to Crazy Steve's fireworks and abortion clinic. No fetus can beat us, you know what I mean? It's every day is Labor Day, so
anti-Labor Day.
Yes. Yeah. So I've for years talked about that sort of that. And then the, like you get behind like the lady in the minivan with her whole thing is just covered with, you know, 8 different anti-abortion bumper stickers. Like, oh, thank God. I didn't know how I felt about abortion. Then I got behind a lady in a minivan today, just totally changed my opinion. I don't think you should be able to have 8, you know what I mean? Unless, you know, I don't even know why you would need that many. The first would get the message across, but I realize some of them I agree with, you know, like choose life, that's fine, or abortion stops a beating heart or whatever, but so do cheeseburgers, you know what I mean? Where's that bumper sticker? And but the one that always gets me is God is pro-life. When people say God is pro-life, because how do you say that when every living creature ever dies, right? He sent Jesus here to die. So how pro-life is that? You know what I mean? He's obviously pro-choice as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he's 50-50 at best, right? Everything has to be born, but everything has to die. So he plays the fence.
And it's funny, just doing those, I realize how much I've been off stage and not working on that material because I'm in my head like, oh, I haven't done this stuff. So it's like I'm missing beats and having to go back and like, oh, I left out a chunk there somehow, you know? So it's, but because those things are work, they have to be told start to finish sort of the way they go, you know, or it just sounds like, hey, I'm doing abortion jokes, you know? Like, and so, so I didn't do a good job preparing on that one, let's say, but what's another issue right now? I'm stuck on the planet, to be honest. The global warming and I don't know if it's my own negativity, but I think it's over. And I think we're already in extinction and we just don't know it yet, you know? So, you know, when I see like the vaccine coming out, I'm like, thank God we got the vaccine out before the Arctic finished melting. You know what I mean? Otherwise we'd all be really sick during this extinction. You know, it would get really bad. You know? Cause I don't know if, I literally fight my own depression on this and talking about it to crowds. First of all, people don't believe that this is happening. They refute there, or they don't think it's real, or you're just in denial about it. But I don't know if you've seen the new endangered species list, but we're all on it. I don't know if you know what I'm saying? So we can either sit around and cry about it, or we can sort of laugh at humanity slipping on the banana peel, so to speak. So that's sort of what I'm trying to do, is sort of, you know, because here's a list of things that are more catastrophic for life, all of life on the planet, than climate change. There's no list, right? The only thing on that list is perhaps climate change deniers who are walking around like, it's not real, Tom, you're Chicken Little. This guy is going, no, Chicken Little didn't have 50 years of scientific evidence to back him up that the sky was falling. There's proof that's led to this. People are like, I don't believe it. I think that global warming is a myth. That's a myth. Yeah, well, you also think Jonah spending 3 days in a whale's belly is fact, okay? So you don't get to participate in this conversation anymore. You're like, it's a Chinese man. To me, that's like if a fire alarm was going off, right? In a room of crowded people, and we're like, holy shit, we should get out of here. There's a fire. Fire alarms are bullshit. That's just a myth perpetrated by the Chinese battery manufacturers trying to get you to buy fire alarm batteries. It's just a myth. Well, I can hear the fire trucks and it's getting warmer in here. Bullshit. It ain't warmer. It was warmer here once 3,000 years ago. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And fire doesn't even burn you. That's just a liberal myth. You know, it's like, holy fuck, all of science, literally 98% of like cross fields of science say that this is a huge threat, that we have to do something about it. And you're like, I don't believe it. Only took 9 out of 10 dentists to get you to change toothpaste. Fucking meanwhile, every day, it'd be like if you were like, I don't believe that diet and exercise bullshit that the doctors and nutritionists keep talking about. That's, you can get thin eating muffins. You know, it's frustrating to me. That's all I'm saying. Like even the Pope came out last year, or a year and a half ago, released an encyclical. And I don't know if people know how big a deal that is when a Pope releases an encyclical, but it was a long thing warning us about more further climate change and how humans, it's due to the fossil fuels and humans are contributing and we got to do something. So even the Pope, you know, shit is serious when the people that have brought us not believing in science for the last 3,000 years are now suddenly on the side of science. I mean, it was just 2 popes ago that they even admitted the earth revolves around the sun. And now they're ahead of Republicans on this.
The Pope's like a science weather vane, right? Like when he starts pointing over here, you're like, you know what? I think there's a hurricane coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not really used to listening to the Pope, but you know what I mean? But now that he's on my side, I'm a little like, see, we need to pay attention.
That Pope,
you know, like, but the deniers, And I think it's in our own self we want to deny too, because you walk outside and it's like Hicks would say, the birds are chirping and it's beautiful out. And you're like, well, where's all this shit happening? Well, I don't have jokes here for this, but like, you know, when the Arctic melts, that ice is gone and all that methane gets released into the atmosphere, which it's the things that the books that I read that were written like in 2012 and 2013, 14 about it. And they're like, we need to do something now, because if this stuff starts happening by 2020, it's too late. And the snowball has started. And then once the sort of Arctic melts, now that heat doesn't get, the sun doesn't get reflected back even anymore. So now it just gets even worse. And it magnifies and magnifies and magnifies until there's no longer oxygen in the oceans being produced and more and more fire. And all the stuff they said you'd start to see, we've started to see. So it's not good, you know. It's like, you know, and then you'll hear Elon Musk saying, oh, I'm going to colonize Mars and, you know,
yeah, because that's such a hospitable environment.
Yeah, terraform it and make it livable. And it's like, holy shit, we can make Mars livable? Imagine what we could have done here. You know what I mean? We should work on, we have like a little bit of a head start. We should maybe figure out a way to reflect the light back into outer space. Or we should have all hands on deck like we did up with this virus, trying to figure out a way to eat carbon somehow or to get it out of the atmosphere. Anyway. So talking to you comedically, what's the way to sort of do all that in not an angry yelly way or and get people to laugh? And because I think it'd be kind of like me coming into you and going, dude, you have terminal cancer and you're going to be dead in 6 months. Let's laugh about it. Right.
Well, kind of, but I mean, I remember watching Carlin, his last 3 or 4 specials. He had gone over into just kind of a lot of bitterness and anger. So he wasn't doing the full comedy treatment on his positions, and he was just going hard punch right after people without really a good punchline.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. I turned that. That's when I sort of turned him off, and then I turned him back on after he died, and was like, "Oh, look how wise this guy was," you know?
Yeah. No, his. I mean, intellectually, sure, he had a lot of insights, but there's always with comedians, like it's the cool thing about stand-ups and working as a stand-up, which is what you're kind of experiencing right now, I think, is that, you know, you've got to get laughs with it. It doesn't matter how great the idea is or how what emotion that you have, emotionality level you have about it, you still have to get that laugh. So you'll make this point and then you'll retreat out of that point real quick to get a laugh.
Right.
Get a good laugh, and then they'll let you go back in a little bit. But here, just, you know, as long as it's emotionality and stimulating, I don't care. Like, if you want to rant at it.
But that's what I mean. I'm asking you specific, like almost as a, you know, as a writer and as a comic, like how you, what, and you, I, you know, I know you as watching other comics and helping them refine that and find the way to get the most out of it. I find this stuff that I was just saying, when I get to doing it, you know, I can get on rolls and I can get out of it with older material about the planet, you know, making fun of Stephen Hawking saying we were going to die. So, but it has to be done. A lot of times it stops my show, like literally. Sure. So, and I'm like, what happened? These are funny jokes. You know what I mean? And it's like, they either just adamantly disagree with it, or that's just, oh dude, what are you doing here? We came here to have fun and you know?
Yeah. It's a weird phenomenon. That's why I like learning live stand up and how precious it is, how easy it is to break that feeling with the audience. Mm-hmm. If you make them think too much, then, you know, their brain's working too hard and they can't just relax and enjoy. If you hit their political triggers and their social issue triggers, then they get in this emotional state of resistance and they can't enjoy. And so it's a really delicate balance. And it's one of the things that's bothered me somewhat about, especially the last part of my career doing stand-up, I got really bored with just the jokes.
Right.
And I don't care about making social issues points. I don't care.
You're really in trouble then.
What I care about is the experience with the audience. So like what I would do if I was writing about climate change and I wanted to discover all the lines in there is I'd just go up and be like, hey, who believes in climate change? Who doesn't believe in clouds? Like, who doesn't think clouds are actually there? It's like some liberal, you know, myth of, it's just white sky.
Right. So like it's almost like the fire alarm version. Cause like, I find that I can get no matter who to laugh at that, you know?
Yeah.
Try to put that sort of in the first end of the first third and to sort of crank gives you those laughs of the credibility to sort of get you to the next thing, you know?
And I like doing it in dialogue because I never challenge people. I don't care how wrong they are. I sort of do this ironic celebration of them and what they just said. But you can still make all the same points. You're just not doing attack mode. You're kind of like bonding. It's always co-building mode. So like this, like when did you, do you know people that are climate deniers in your family or friends?
To be honest, I think we all are. I'm very doomsday about it, but I think, yes, almost everybody is. Everybody thinks, oh, we'll fix it, or science will come up with an answer. They did come up with an answer, and we ignored that for 30 years, and now we're at the consequences, right? So I find even people that are like, oh, yeah, we should do something, aren't as concerned about it as I am, you know what I mean? And not that I'm so concerned about it that I'm like, all right, well, my wife will be like, that's recyclable. And I'm like, no, too late.
You're really? So concerned about it that you've given up.
I'm so concerned about it that I've said, fuck it.
I care too much to care anymore.
Well, I literally, sometimes I that's what happens. I'll restore my sanity I listen to sports radio now instead of real life, mm-hmm. right? I just listen to sports talk instead of listening to any news talk radio. And I do a lot less of watching the news or I block sort of I'll snooze like the doomsayer sort of people, that the climate sort of people that talk about the science and near-term human extinction and all that kind of stuff that I sort of followed on Facebook. And then, so when they disappear from my thing and then I'm not paying attention to it for a while, I sort of don't wake up with that dread, you right. know, like, ugh, you know, but I do what, how I'm doing it in my life is I just get up and make sure I try to make sure, like, I'll think about it. And I'll go tell my son I love him and give him a kiss, or my wife, you know what I mean? I just try to
walk outside and throw and an ice
then,
cube at the
yeah. Or, and then I'll ignore it all for a while. And it's just like, okay, I'm just being crazy.
Yeah.
And well, then I see a news story again and I'm like, and it starts the cycle again a little bit, or the snooze runs up on those people on Facebook.
There's a psych term that would be useful for you, a psych concept of dissonance tolerance. Like, how much dissonance can you tolerate? And dissonance is any negative feeling,
right?
Essentially. And so dissonance puts people into a state where they've got to get back into balance. They've got to get back into consonance, where they feel at one with things, they feel safe, they feel all the things that human beings like to feel. So anything that throws you over into dissonance will either do one of two things. It'll make you start going to hypercognitive mode, which is why a lot of people can't sleep at night, because they're trying to deal with their dissonance issues. Or they'll do, research, or they may actually do something. The problem right. with climate change is one little person out of 7 billion doing something is doing nothing.
Yes. No matter, I could literally do like, live like a monk and it doesn't change it. Like, and we're not gonna change. We won't wear masks. So we're not gonna do anything about it.
Well, take the long view, Tom. So what, we screw up the planet, we burn everybody off. And then, it's like that for 1,000 years. And then some new species comes up and takes over. All we've done is altered it.
Yes. That's, you run into the, speaking of Carlin, you run into, when you talk about this, you run into his 20 year ago, the planet's going to be fine. It's humans that are going to go away. That doesn't make me feel any better, right? Like, you know what I mean? Now when the tree falls in the woods, it won't make a sound because we're not hearing.
But that will, it'll fall right on us. And you'd be like, oh shit.
But yeah, but here's the thing. There's no, in these, maybe that's the hope, is that it will be like you say, and not even more compounding, like without the poles, as the planet heats up and the atmosphere gets worse, it turns into Venus quickly.
Yeah, the Earth has been a hellhole for most of its existence. The volcanoes and everything else, and mass extinctions are incredibly common.
Yes, and that's another thing. Yes, there's been 7. Yeah.
Yeah. Where they just take out everything pretty much. And right. Guess what? It just takes a couple million years and look, it's back in a new form. Nothing ever stops life. Like, it will come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Humans, that's very helpful too. Yes. because life just is, it doesn't just exist here. So, and we don't really understand what it is. So, all right, let's get back to jokes.
What else you got?
So if you break up with somebody and people tell you though, hey, don't worry, there's a lot of fish in the sea. Guess what? There's not anymore.
I always wonder, like, they talk about we kill 60 million sharks a year. Like, they kill 12 of us and we kill 60 million. How many fucking sharks are there? We eat so much out of the ocean, and it just never, like, it's an incredible amount of food and animals that we're harvesting. How
right.
much life is there? It's insane.
It really is insane. You're right. And how varied it is, and how, and human beings, we're the most evolved and thoughtful species out there, right? And we know that because we tell it to ourselves over and over for 1,000 years, right? So,
well, we're the smartest because we designed the tests.
Right, that's right. We're the ones who know what smart means. Other stuff. Let's do another chunk of stuff. So what interests you more? Talking about the troops, talking about what's going on in Israel, Palestine.
Let's do Israel, Palestine, because that's popping up big again right now.
Right. So that's the way I do this is I talk about how cool my wife is, right? And how one of the things I love about her is that she keeps me sort of connected to reality and will call me on my bullshit, right? So, because I'm an idealist and I'm solving the world's problems or whatever, and I'll be arguing with people on the internet, here's what they need to do to solve Israel and Palestine, right? They need to come at it from a place of nonviolence and compromise. And my wife says, would you shut the fuck up, Tom? You're not going to solve Israel-Palestine from our damn living room. Jack, don't you have a sister that hasn't talked to you in a year and a half? Why don't you get her on the phone, okay? Why don't you get your entire family to unblock you on Facebook, right? And then you solve the Middle East. right? And to me, you know, she's right, obviously, because they're never going to solve it. They have literally been fighting over the same pieces of land for thousands of years, right? And they're like, our God lives here, and he says, kill you. No, our God lives here, and he says, kill you, right? So they do, which makes no sense to me. You know what I mean? If no matter what religion I am, I don't know every religion or whatever, but you know what I mean? I think it's fair to say that I can speak for all the gods worshiped on earth when I say, I don't need your help killing people, right? I'm good. I got that covered, right? Look at that tsunami. You know, I don't need your help. But it's just overwhelming, right? How much more armed Israel is than Palestine, right? Like Palestine launched 3,000 missiles into Israel and they killed 10. 10? What the fuck? Like, how bad is your? That's like, what is that? The Shaq free throw bomb? Are you kidding me? 10? Their suicide bombers do better than that. They fight with rocks, and I'm no military genius, but every war you fight with rocks, you're gonna lose, right? Unless they're coming at you with scissors, right? Because you know, rock paper scissors joke. Keep it light, you know. and then back to the point of how they're not gonna solve it is they don't. It's this huge issue that needs to be solved, and they don't recognize each other's right to exist. Right, Israel doesn't recognize their right to exist. They don't recognize Israel's right to exist. Right? How is that your side of an argument that has to be solved? You don't recognize our right to exist. If I'm arguing with my wife about some shit we can't solve, I can't just be like, you know what? I don't recognize your right to exist anymore. Right? I'm putting up a wall right here in the laundry room—that's your side. You know, to me, that is the geopolitical version of la 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 la, right? Which is. That might be where Allah started with, you know what I'm saying?
yeah. Good pull. Nice.
Yes. And then people, you know, some people will be like, when I was doing jokes like that, when I was in Afghanistan, they were like, you can't do any more jokes like that about Muslims or whatever. You're like, what? Like, you have to have a sense of humor about your religion. I mean, come on. I mean, especially Muslims. The capital of Pakistan is Islamabad. Right? Islam a bad. It's built right. Like, how is that? There's no Christianity as sucks North Dakota, right? It's funny, right? And it's not just Israel-Palestine fighting over those little, like, you know, China and Tibet or whatever. That's a different thing. But like India and Pakistan have been fighting over Kashmir forever. India and Pakistan and Israel-Palestine. I think that it's whenever you put a place that starts with an I next to a place that starts with a P, right? That's when shit goes down.
That's
why in this country, we had the foresight to have Ohio separating Indiana and Pennsylvania. Right? helps us keep the Hoosiers away from the Amish.
That is such a great angle. Like who's ever thought of that angle as the cause of Israel-Palestine? It's a lettering problem.
Yes, exactly. So that's sort of that's my Israel-Palestine material that I've done for years or whatever. So. And then what I'll try to do is reshape that around the current sort of issue. The problem is, the good thing is the issue never changes.
Yeah, right? It's always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trump gets in there and he's like, I'm going to fix it, which, I mean, who knows, you know, who maybe he could. Wouldn't that be crazy? People are like, you know, stranger things have happened. First of all, that sentence wouldn't be true. I think it's funny that we keep thinking that's going to get solved when it's, to me, it's a human rights issue and all that stuff. That's another one of those issues where you have to avoid the real meat of it and dance sort of around it, you know, and still try to say what you want to say in it, you know?
Well, do people even understand enough about Israel and Palestine to be offended? I doubt they do. Like it's probably sub people like who are, you know, attached to that somehow, like Israeli, you know, people who follow those issues. You don't get a lot of Palestinians here.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
It's funny. I had a guy, Bob Gephardt, when I was working his club in the Comedy Stop in Atlantic City one time. And he came back after the show and he goes, really funny, Tom. I love what you're doing. But you said Hamas and Hezbollah in one sentence. Nobody knows who that is. You can't. do that material. I'm like, what do you mean? Nobody knows. Everybody knows who that is. He's like, nobody knows who that is. I'm like, well, then they should know. That's like, that's the minimum to know. Like, I just remember back then I would be so offended by anybody trying to tell me what I shouldn't do. But it was just funny that he was like, you know, he basically was like, these people, they don't care about that. I'm like, this is New Jersey. There's so many Jewish people here. They know the Israel-Palestine issue, you know?
Yeah, it is weird though. And this is where, again, one of the things that frustrated me with stand-up was that that line you just said about they should know. Like, that's why I almost always mix information into my comedy now. Like, it just feels flat if I'm not doing some kind of education. Maybe it's because I was a professor for so long, but I'm always doing instruction. I'm always like, hey, I'm going to teach this one little concept and I'm going to do comedy about it for like 10 minutes, but I'm going to drive that one home. That nail is going to be in your forehead by the time you leave.
You're right. You know, it's funny because if you watch enough stand-up, you know, like, people will bring up, like, have you seen Chopped? Well, here's what Chopped is. And they'll break down what Chopped is so that they can do their bit.
Yeah.
But I'm like, well, they should know. They should know what the intricacies and the problems have been with Israel. They should know that how it started in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe, again, it's because I was a professor for so long. I have seen the bottom of the barrel of ignorance. Like, I know how far down the cave it goes. Like, you got to go down to the bottom and make sure all the people down there are like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. What's Israel?
So. You have this debate your whole kind of career. I used to really believe that people were a lot smarter than we gave them credit for. Like, I think the same thing with television. Television is about dumbing it down, right? And I just think that that's led to dumbing it down, where I think that...
Well, I don't believe in leaving it dumb. I just think, like, you got to recognize that's where they start and you got to drag them upwards, you know? I think TV makes a mistake of just staying dumb, but you got to go down and be like, okay, I guess I'm going to talk about Israel, Palestine here. Palestine is a country. I don't know if y'all know that, but it's a country. They got carved out in the Middle East by Israel, essentially, you know, and squeezed. And they just want to get rid of it. Maybe they would, I don't know, but people don't even know that.
Right. And, or how it started, where there was people living there and they were like, okay, we're giving you this land. Like, it's so crazy, you know, like, because your book says so. What do you mean? Like, you have a book that you go by that's like, this is where we live. This is our God-given place. It's so weird to me that we're just like, oh, yeah.
One of my things about it was like, you know how they build castles in like Ireland or Scotland or whatever, and they'll ship them over here. Well, just dig up all the dirt and we'll give you half of Iowa. Just dump all the Israeli dirt. You're like, okay, that's now Israel.
Yeah, that's a good plan.
You know?
Yes.
We're not using half of Iowa anyway. All right, Israel, Palestine, geopolitics. Like, do you do any other geopolitics stuff?
I don't even know what that word means, but really, what is that? What do you mean by that?
International politics.
I do more like... I've always wanted to do, it's more generally like the human condition as I see it, you know, or what the stuff I read, you know. I've never in my career really done the work, I guess, to do the main topic I would want to cover would be nonviolence, you know. And I just have never really found the angle in to cover, but it's literally almost in every, when I go through and I'm start making a list of what stuff I want to write and work on, it's always there. And I just somehow, I can't get it. You know, I'll put it into a talk about nonviolence and raising my son. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, you know, people are like, no, you need to hit your kids. Right. You gotta spank them. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, you see every comics are like, you need to beat your motherfucking kids, right? And the place is going crazy. And it's like, yeah, that's a great point. You know what I'm saying? Because I think if you look into any prison system in the world, it is overflowing with inmates who just weren't beaten enough as children. Right? Like, what you in for, Hacksaw Hank? My parents with their patience and their love and their understanding, you know what I mean? Or, you know, or like you see, you know, so to me, like I use it in that, I'll use it like that, or, but I haven't really been able to tackle it in a way that is funny, you know, which is, I like your idea, but I don't have, when I get on stage, my mind goes, I got to get to the laugh. I got to get to the laugh. So I'm not as good yet. And I've been doing it a long time of embracing the silence of like, okay, I'm going to talk for a while, you know?
Yeah. I don't like to do that either. Like I'm like one sentence straight, one sentence, then a joke off of it. Like, I don't like long non-comedy when you're doing comedy. But that's also why I dialogue so much with the audience. Like anytime I'm getting silence or I don't feel like I've got a fireball to throw, just grab the audience and be like, you know, did you get spanked by your, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
hell
yeah,
yes. Yeah. He hit me with it, you know, blender.
Yes.
The blender once.
You know what I started doing right before the pandemic hit? And it was something that I hadn't done my whole career in comedy, which is just a little bit of that dialoguing with the crowd. Where if I was dialoguing with the crowd in the past, it was because they imposed on what I was trying to say, my list, you know, but, and, or things aren't going well. And I would inevitably go to the person that wasn't laughing or was angry or was disagreeing. And I could tell. So I would go to that, which always led to nowhere. Right.
Right.
And somehow it just occurred to me I started doing it, which was finding the people that I would, cause I was paying attention to the crowd where when somebody would perk up, I would go to them then. Like if I'm like, oh, you know, I was thinking about getting a vasectomy and a woman like hits her husband's arm or something. That's like, yeah. Okay. And that would always lead to what you're talking about. Some of that dialogue that gets you back into the bit or creates that real moment. You know what I mean? That generates those genuine moments are what make really all the difference.
Yeah.
And so I'm just starting to tap into that my mind always went to the people that disagreed with me or were negative. And I was like, I got to confront that, or I would kind of reel from it a little bit, but the embracing the people that are having the fun is way better. Or you can see they relate. They almost always have you got the vasectomy, how to go over the, they all, they,
they've got
they
a story. They'll
something.
Set you up.
Yes. They
they'll
say
set you up set every
me
up time.
Gets me back into what the way I would talk. And then you end up having a comedy in a way that's like talking with a genuine human being instead of talking at a bunch of people, which I love them both, but it's just, it adds a great dynamic and energy and almost, and then a confidence to do it again, you know? And you, what I don't want to end up is, well, one time this guy said, duh, 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 and
no,
so,
no, no, you can't. Then it's not, it's no fun. Then you're just, yeah, you got to stay in the moment. You got to chase it. Chase the rabbit.
Yeah.
So. What else you got? I know you got the stuff on the Fed. You want to talk about the Fed?
Well, the Fed to me, I've actually started getting away from that just because now I'm not even sure if I was right. You know, I mean, I did all that research into money and I was like, you know, money is our God. Like I actually started to try to do that stuff last time I was working somewhere and I was like, oh, I don't remember this bit. I don't remember how it goes, you know? And same with Bitcoin. People are like, hey, are you a Bitcoin millionaire? Cause I was talking about it 10 years ago or whatever, 7-8 years ago. And I don't listen to my own advice, you know? So I go back and forth, like on my hope about the global warming thing, right? Because it's like, well, I've been wrong about a lot of shit. So hopefully this is just another one of those. And then I'm like, when I look back at my comedy, it's almost like, oh, I've been right about this, 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 and this, like 3 or 4 or 5 years before it happened because I was reading about it.
Uh-huh.
So the Fed, one of the cool things about my Fed thing is how, because I talk about how it starts off talking about, to me, about how it talks about money is our God, right? It's what we worship. It's what we, you know, what we want more than anything. It's what we think will make us happy. You know, it's what, there's altars built all over the country in the form of banks that we worship, right? You know, how many of y'all haven't stood in front of a ATM and prayed like, dear God, please let there be $300 in my account, you know? So it's, you know, it starts off talking, you know, and then about how money's not real. It's a construct of our minds and it's made up. Our money's not backed by anything, right? You know, and then that gets you to national debt where it's like we owe trillions of dollars. Like to who? To ourselves. Really? Ourselves? That's good news. Because if I owe myself $100, well, you know what? Fuck it. We good. You know, I'm gonna let that slide. But we don't. We owe it to the Federal Reserve Bank, which is at least it's a for-profit private company, which is what it is, right? It's not federal. There's no reserve. It's like, it's just a made up name. It's like real cheese. That's not real cheese. That's the name, that's the brand of the cheese, right? It's not federal. There are no reserve. Like it's not, that's who we owe the money to. They're owners of it. And so, you know, and so I get into talk about how our leaders were against, Jefferson was against it, Jackson was against it, Franklin, all of them, they were against, and they're on the money, right? The only one, they're all against it. And it's an insult. It's like putting Mother Teresa's face on condoms and pass them out of Planned Parenthood. Like, get your Mother Teresa condoms. I died a virgin, so you don't have to. It's basically. So, but now, you know, now they're just printing it even more and more and more. There can't be any expectation that we're paying that shit back. You know what I mean? It's like giving money to your kids at this point. You know what I mean? We're not paying you back. Now they're just doing it so the system, I guess, stays in place or whatever, you know? And the banks we're doing nothing to regulate them. They steal all the money from us and they're still too big to fail. So they have nothing, there's no motive for them to do the right thing. And they continue to do the wrong, like just going, like if you, for instance, I've decided I'm no longer like accepting checks from people that give them to me from Bank of America. Cause I'll get a thing where something will happen. I'll just get like, fuck you. Right. Where, cause I had a guy wrote me a check, $100. He's like, he didn't have it. So he wrote me the check. I go into Bank of America to cash it. And they're like, okay, we can cash this for you, but it's going to cost you $6 since you don't have an account here. I'm like, well, he has an account here. That's why I'm here. That's how banks work. He's like, no, we're going to have to charge you the $6. I'm like, let me ask you something. If that check was for $5, would I owe you a dollar? Are you fucking kidding me right now? Do you not understand how money works? So, and then how this wraps up is it goes back to Jesus. Like, that's how you know money is, like, it's in the Bible's filled with it, right? Money is the root of all evil. You know, you can't worship both God and money. A rich man can never get into heaven, going through the eye of a needle, all that shit. It's like, I'm surprised Joel Osteen has a damn business model with the whole prosperity preacher thing of like, if you don't have money, it's because you don't believe in God enough. No, you're a fuck. You use one thing to sell something else. Like, that's why Joel Osteen's had to write so many books, right? It's so, the hardest part of being a prosperity preacher is making sure that your fucking people don't open their Bibles, because it's literally filled with them saying it's not, right? In Luke, Jesus says, how does he say it? He says, the quote is, Jesus says, truly I tell you, money, a rich man cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. I've always loved how he starts with, truly I tell you, right? Like, like all the shit I was saying in Matthew, that was just bullshit. But this is important. Pay attention. It's the fucking root of all evil. And you can see it in the collapse of our country, right? The greed that embracing greed has got us there, you know, got us to collapse. And then I got my buddy Brett, who was sitting with me, and he's like, Tom, first of all, you can't use Jesus as an example, right? Because he's an imaginary, fictional, mythical character, which I don't know if I believe that either. I think he was a real guy, right? Because he was a carpenter, right? Obviously, you don't give imaginary people jobs, right? Especially shitty ones. You know, like, you just, if they were really making up a job for Jesus, they'd have given him something like, you know, like, I don't know, like a beat reporter at the Nazareth Daily Bugle or something, like superhero-y, you know, or like he's a donkey salesman, like, come on down to Jesus's discount donkeys, we're slashing prices or whatever, you know. And it's funny to me to think of him as a carpenter, because that would mean that he built a lot of things, right? So my question is, do you think when he was up on the cross that he looked at it all with a carpenter's critical eye for a few minutes? He's like, wait a minute, this isn't even level. This is it's not plumb. The cypress is splitting. This is, forgive them, Father, for they don't build them like they used to. Yeah. right? So, my thing is, he must have built things, right? So he had to build, if he was a carpenter, he had to build like a tree house, or, you know, or a bird house, or a chest of drawers or something. So that would be interesting if that's how he found out he was real, right? Like you're watching like Antique Roadshow or something. And the guy's like, oh my God, this scroll pole looks absolutely ancient. Let's see if who built this. And he's like, holy Jesus Christ. Actually, Jesus Christ, you got this at a yard sale? No. And that's another sort of little chunk of stuff that people that are religious get mad at. And then you're like, wait a minute, I'm not making fun of Jesus. I'm actually, this joke is proving he's real and telling us what his message was, within this is that's sort of laid in there, but people hear what they want to hear, you know? And then, you know, I don't know, were we talking last time about when I did the pew tweets, when I would go around to do the mm-hmm. different pew tweet, right?
That was you going to churches. For people who don't know, that was Tom going and live tweeting church sermons.
Right. So I would go to all these different churches, you know, and go to like the craziest church I could, or to go to like, you know, like the Pentecost church where he's yelling, you know, Jesus, you need to get a stronger grip on Jesus. So when Satan comes knocking at your door, you're well prepared. Like, well, shit, Satan doesn't come knocking at my door. Christians come knocking at my door. You know, I think I can grip to keep those motherfuckers away. I mean, come on.
Sentinella, like some, what do they call the Sentinella camp candles to keep the Christians off your porch?
Yeah, well, I wonder if that's what we need, like a Christian zapper,
Christian zapper.
But I've, you know,
just a cross.
Yeah. But I used to do that all the time, where I would really, I read a lot on religions. That was the first sort of thing. That was the first thing I realized before. You know, then I, like we were talking about the money. Once I realized money wasn't real and we made it up, it was like, what? And then it sent me on this thing of reading all these different economic books and money and, you know, all this stuff. And before that, it was religion, where I was like, what? That's not what I, you know? And then it sent me on reading like Celestine Prophecy and Richard Bach, and then the Bhagavad Gita, and just reading them all, and reading all the different things. I remember being in a bookstore one time, and in that section, it's like religion and New Age and the occult. And then in Barnes & Noble, they actually sell satanic Bibles. I don't know if you've ever seen one in the store.
Really?
Right. Literally, it's like black and creepy, just with the pentagram on it. And I'm like, wow, do they really sell a lot of these here? Or do people that want these just steal them, right? It seems like devil 101 to take the damn book, doesn't it? But people immediately, you just open it and you just feel the creepiness of like people around you are like, ooh, like taking their kid. Look, it's a Satan boy over there, right? I had to get a hustler, right? Just to put it in something. Thank God they sell those. Because that's not a book you can read, right? The Satanic Bible, even if you're doing research, or even if people really knew that it's sort of a mockery, it's almost like the Flying Spaghetti Monster that got out of hand, you know? But that's not, you can't sit down next to me on a plane and be like, hey, what you reading? No, a little satanic Bible. Fucking flight attendant. Yes. Can you move me over next to that guy with the turban, please? Because, you know, at least his book's kind of like mine.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's a great bit. Satanic Bible and Barnes and Not So Noble.
Yeah, that is, oh, Not So Noble. That's a good line. Oh. See, those are the things, those are the kind of things I miss that like I need, I like to put back in. And I don't know how you like, as you like to say, when you sit in the back of the room and talk to Comic Club, I'm talking about going to see Louis C.K. this weekend. A buddy of mine owns a club in Atlanta. And I was like, if I take a bunch of notes and stuff, will you send them back to him? And he was like, no. Like what? No, I would never consider even trying to tell him how to do his act or whatever.
Not telling him anything, just a comic throwing him some free icing.
Yes, that's how I feel about it. But there is something to like, who are you to give Louis C.K.? But to me, that's what I mean. Like, well, some people, you know, like when I worked with Mitch, I remember specifically being like, hey, you do that thing and you call them snowmen, but they're, you know, and I was like, specifically some of the words he was using, I was like, have you thought about trying it like this, you know? And I remember Mitch just being like, nah, man, you do it that way. I you know, or, oh, that's a really good tag, man, but I don't use anything like that. You got it. You can try that. Like, oh, okay. You know, like he very specifically wanted to make sure that nothing came from any, but I think most comics are like, if you come off and you have a tag for them, they'll like, oh yeah, yeah, let me try that. Yeah. And most of them don't work. You know, people give them to me all the time too. And you try them and you're like, eh, cause they're just not your thing. But other times it's like, that's the line that changed it around for me. You know, I do a joke about being when I was in Afghanistan and them being like, similar to what I was telling you earlier about when they say, I was doing some jokes about the extremists and they're like, you can no more jokes about Muslims while you're here in Afghanistan. Like, what? We can hunt and kill them for 17 years, but I can't tell a couple jokes about them, right? Can I drop a joke from a drone on a village or something? and that was the joke. And then another comic, this, my friend BC, was like, hey, you should do like a knock, knock, who's there, right? And I was like, oh, that's so, that immediately, now that joke is like a go-to joke. Cause it'd be, can I drop a joke from a drone on the village? Like, knock, knock, who's there? Not you anymore. Killing me and civilians, right? That's jokes without borders. You know? So it's like a one little tag can send you in a whole nother thing. So yeah. I love it, you know? And I'm arrogant enough to think that I got a good ear, that I would be like, hey, you should try this, you know?
Yeah. But I think guys like Louis CK, you know, coming through New York and he's worked so much professionally in TV, they appreciate other writers. And so they know, like, you hear things that they'll never hear. Like when you're talking about like drones, that's why they call them drones, because they're boring. They have no jokes. Like they're just dropping bombs. Like that guy's droning on. No, that's,
damn it.
That used to be just boredom. Now yeah. Droning on means El Village.
The drones are either going to bore you to death or we're just going to drop a bomb on your ass. That's how it's going to work.
But it is interesting, like guys that become super professionalized like that, I think they recognize that their stuff starts to get stale, like just writing when everybody's going to laugh, you know, just writing on your own with that audience. You no longer have the audience no longer has a good ear for you, a good reflection back, because they just laugh at everything because you're Louis C.K.
Think that that's how it works? Or I would feel like it would get harder because...
Well, I think it's hard.
You couldn't really repeat anything you've ever... sort of covered before, right? You know,
But I mean, even with that stuff, half the audience hasn't heard your best bits, you know?
Yeah, I guess me and my wife have argued that this back and forth for 20 something years. And she's like, just do the bit. They came to see that bit or to come with their friend. I'm like, no, once you hear a joke, it's not as funny anymore.
Yeah.
And she's sure. Like, no, it's like music. You want to hear the thing you know. And I'm like,
no, it's not like music.
No.
Well, that's the patchworkism challenge of stand-up, right? Is that people don't self-select. Like there are people who would go and listen to the jokes again and just enjoy those, but they are 4% of the audience or whatever. And then there's the 60% of the audience that only wants fresh material, you know, written that day. And so you get that patchwork audience and then you're like, I can't please everybody. I'm just going to do this.
Right.
And I think that's part of the thing too, about people not listening. Like Mitch Hedberg was a good example of somebody who just heard jokes in his head and he probably didn't want anybody else's, you know, voice in there. And half his jokes weren't great. You know, half were awesome. Well, 20% were awesome. 30% were good. And then half died. He had more dead air in his act than, you know, anybody else.
Yes. But it's weird how it was really a part of it. But you know what? To do one-liners, one after the other, you just can't. You have to have that dead space of a few that don't work in a row and then bam. And then
part of it. Yeah. You have to have a ton of character to be able to carry it when there's no pleasure in the script.
Right.
You know, he had
very rarely. I think Larry Reeb was a one-liner guy that I saw pull it off.
But Uncle Larry, right? I mean, you got to pour a ton of character into that stuff.
Yes.
A comic. A comic book.
Yes. And who was the original one? The one with the screwed up teeth that from Boston. That was
Stephen Wright?
Yes, Stephen Wright. Yes. Like even Stephen Wright, I went and saw him one time and it was like, after 30 minutes, even him, he was picking up, he had a guitar. He picked up a guitar and he did some stuff. And it was like, okay, he has to, yeah, he had to figure out a way to break
up. It's too limited of a cadence. Like the range is too small. Human beings zone in on it. And their brains start getting boring with that same cadence and all that kind of stuff. So it's just too much. But I would, Louis's a pro comic and he's used to hanging out with other people. I'd go back, try to go back to the green room. Hey, yes, man, do you like tags? I got a bunch of fucking tags for you.
Okay, speaking of doing one-liners, and this is opposite of what your show is, literally that's some of what I've been writing is...
let's hear some of those.
Collecting. I got a whole list of them, right?
Let's hear some. Yeah.
It's hard to remember them, so, you know? So they're like just jokes. They're like... old people are always complaining about young people, right? Like I heard an old dude, he was like an 85-year-old dude. He's sitting around, he's like, kids today, they got it made. When I was a kid, we didn't have 85-year-olds.
We didn't have what? I missed it.
We didn't have 85-year-olds, right? He's 80.
That's true, right?
I know, it's true, yes. It's very true. People say you got to go for broke, right? If you want to achieve what your dreams, you got to go for broke. I've never even gone for broke, and I've achieved it. So I must be a prodigy, right? Because I don't know if you know this about me. I run a nonprofit, right? It's called My Career.
Ah, now you're Andy Kindler. That was Andy Kindler joke.
Is it? Is it?
Oh, he has so many self-deprecating, take a hit for Andy jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's great with it. He did a joke once in Tampa, and I worked with him there for a week. And he had 8 shows and 4 standing ovations and 4 with over 30 walkouts. Like either they got him or they did not.
Right.
And he developed a joke while he was there that week. I think he did that week, but it was like, hey folks, like when he was doing badly, the club, and I'm not doing great, but the club is offering a special, Andy Kindler sandwich. It's not very good, but you get to eat it for 45 minutes. Great. Yeah, so many great saves.
Yes, it's funny. I had the guy who runs Acme, Lewis Lee, right? He told me once that he judged how he was as an owner by how much of a draw he could make Andy Kindler.
All right, sure.
So he's that rare comedy club owner that's like that, which I thought was
a perfect description of somebody who understands, the meta sort of edges of comedy.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Okay, here we go. Here's another one. So this example of the one line, like lemon, people say if you, life gives you lemons, make lemonade, right? Well, first of all, life never gives me lemons unless I specifically ask the waitress for no lemon in my water, right? Then I get nothing but lemons. I can hate it.
Yeah, but life also doesn't give you any sugar or water or a pitcher.
Right.
What are you going to do with lemons?
Write this shit down. I had a near-death experience, right? I was in a hotel room and the guy in the hotel room next to me had a heart attack, right? So it was really
that's a good one-liner right there. A good bait and switch.
My life is a mess, right? So to help me, I started doing some yoga, and my favorite position is the downward spiral.
Come on. Hey,
I'm offended when people just say damn it, right? Because don't take the God out of God damn it. Disrespect.
That's a bumper sticker. Come on.
Right. I think the church and state should be at least as separate as the church is from Christ's message. Okay. The devil's greatest trick was what? Making people think he wasn't real, right? Jesus' greatest trick was making everybody think he was a white guy. That was beautiful.
Hey. He was good at it too. That guy's white.
Yes. So these are the, they tend to be somewhat religious, and so, like the hello, people say hello. I think that's very too pro devil. Hello, we should start saying heaven-o to people. People say I got your back. People always say they got your back. Like when I was performing for the troops in Afghanistan, they'd be like, we got your six. We got your six. What's the six? We got your back. We got your back. Well, great. Well, the fucking bullets are coming from the front. Can somebody look around at my 12, my one? You're just really a bunch of you guys walking behind me, watching me get my ass kicked.
Yeah. You're basically saying you're our shield. Right?
Yes. I'm your bulletproof. I'm so far left. I don't even like to be right in an argument with my wife. I've noticed as I'm getting older, I talk to myself a lot, right? But I'm also a really bad listener. So really,
another solid joke. You had two really, those will work. Those two jokes will definitely work.
I dated a girl in the military once who was really easy and crazy. So now I have PT STDs.
See, good puns too.
Yeah.
Now you're like a stocky. You just go up and test these jokes with the audience, right?
Yes. You only live once unless you're Hindu. Then you come back as a cow. All right. That's why I'm not Hindu. blah, blah, blah. People say you should be more positive. I talk to them about climate change or whatever. You should be more positive. Be more positive. And I am positive that we're done. this one is a herpes. Just says herpes. I don't remember that one. It's around the tip of my lip, though. Oh my God! Come on, it'll come back to me.
It's so much fun to just get up and rapid fire jokes, though. You know?
Yeah.
That you've got to have the saves for when the one-liners don't work. But just like, hey, I got so many jokes, I'm giving them away. Here we go.
Yes. People say to close on your best jokes, but all I got is best jokes. how I'm building my new act is it's going to be my new show. My shows are always basically my wife and son and me, a couple big issue things and a little chunk of one-liners, you know? So it's like, I have whatever, 40, 50 of these, and it'll become 20, you know? I would literally love to be able to just go up and do just jokes, you know? But even my just jokes end up having.
Yeah, there's always bite in them.
You know?
Yeah.
Like the Vatican, right? I realized I was reading an article about it and they were talking about the Vatican prison. And it was like, the Vatican has its own prison system. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Like the hardest part of it, the most exhausting part about being in the Vatican prison is probably how many times you have to beat the shit out of a pedophile. I mean, come on, it's got to be constant. Actually, it's not, because they don't actually put him in jail. They just move him to a different parish. So let's go out on this. Memorial Day, right? Was just here. So this is the time where we thank our troops and basically do more of this sort of troop cheerleading thing, right? Where we give it up for the troops all the time, which is, you know, it's fun. I'm not anti troop. I'm anti-governments, right? I'm anti who the troops work for. Those are the people I don't trust or believe in, or, you know, and then we stick with this rhetoric of, I fight for your freedoms, right? When has that ever happened in the last two generations? It hasn't. So stop saying that. That's just cliche that we say to cheerlead people, you know, like what I'm saying is I don't trust our governments and I haven't trusted them, you know, like, we all know the governments are listening to all that nobody's surprised that there's government surveillance, right? You know, like even Obama was like, yes, we've been listening. We're going to continue to listen on a limited basis. And you're just going to have to trust us. If you can't trust your government, then we got a problem. Well, we got a problem. All right. Cause I don't trust them. Right. I don't trust any of them. I don't trust the NSA. I don't trust the CIA. I don't trust the IRS. I don't trust the KKK or the GOP, whatever. If you have three letters in your initial, fuck you. I assume your ass is lying to me. Okay. That's just the way it is. You know, and if that is the government listening to us, then that's actually reassuring. Cause now I know anytime I want to speak directly to the government, all I got to do is say ISIS while I'm talking on my cell phone, right? And be like, ISIS, I think, you know, I don't like what you're doing with healthcare, you know, I think we should backpack bomb the Super Bowl. You need to build a monorail in Phoenix, you know, shit like that. But to me, like if you get on an airplane, throughout life, right? There's always this at a game. There's always give it up for the troops. Give it up for the troops. You're on an airplane. Give it up for the troops, which I think is part of all of us contributing to more war and to more dead bodies coming home with flags on their coffin, you know? And they're not all good people. So fuck you, right? They're not, right? There was 20 6,000 reported sexual assaults in the military every year for the last 10 years. So give it up for the troops, or they will force you to, apparently.
Right? Hey, hey. Yes. I think we're out.
They need to add and avoid, they need to add that to the, to like basic training or something. You know what I mean? Like marching around like, I don't know what you've been told, but this raping shit is getting old. Huh. Get off. She says no. You know, so if that makes me anti-military, then there you go. I don't get
good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Nailed it. First episode of Comedians with Issues right there. Tom Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man. I don't, it feels really flat. Just telling them like that to you.
It's not flat. This was fun. This had energy in it all the way. A lot of laughs, a lot of jokes.
I want to write down that thing you said about the lemons.
It doesn't give you anything else. It just gives you lemons.
Yeah.
They didn't give you a knife to cut them with.
Yeah. Why doesn't life give me some sugar to go with it? Something. Yeah,
come on. What's the point? Here, suck on this lemon.
All right. And then the other one was the droning thing.
Yeah. And I think Barnes and not so
noble. Oh, yeah. Barnes and not noble.
They call this the tag show. Just tag it.
Yeah. Kostaki used to give me crap about how I write the savers like that. Like we were talking about, like you have to have some things to recover for the bad ones. And it's like, you write the saver like first, like, yeah, well, yeah.
Hey, that's an art. That's a little sub art within comedy for sure. Great saves. I love to listen to great saves and asides. Yeah. Asides are my favorite comedy too. Just the shit that people say under their breath.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
All good stuff.
You know, it's funny. That's the guy I was talking about with the drone thing, right? He's a big improv guy and theater guy. And he doesn't mean to. He's always trying to be helpful, but he'll bring that sort of constructive criticism to you. Man, he would lay into me about the way I perform on stage, the way I look down, the way I'm not in the right postures or in the right position. And then those kind of things. He's like you'll mumble punchlines at the end or whatever. He's like, you have to, if you don't think it's great, don't tell it. Tell every joke like it's the punchline. And I can see what he means. But to me, that's a lot of the fun, is that little under your breath thing you say at the end. And that's for the few people. Like Jake Johansson had a joke he used to do every now and then about apple pie. And how they had a candle that smelled like apple pie. And he did it one night. And I was like, dude, I love that joke. That is great. And I go, why don't you tell it every night? And he's like, it's just a joke I do once or twice a week. And I have a certain amount of jokes in my act that are for my crowd.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Like I loved that joke. Most of the crowd, it didn't rip, but it was still funny. But he would specifically have jokes like that in his shows that was for the people that were his, that he knew as my fan, you're going to like this joke.
Yeah, I think.
And I really like that.
You know? All those Easter egg things that you can lay into comedy. Yes. Really, you know, I think that's super fun.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. I appreciate you doing this. This was super fun for me. Got some laughs in there. Some good jokes.
All right. I hope you can use it, man.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I tend to just put everything out into the world and they can tell me where it sucks or not.
Yeah, you got about 2 years, you got about 2 years left because that's it.
comedy at the end of the world. That's where we are. That should be your new CD, Comedy at the End of the World with Tom Simmons.
That's fine. That's fine. Yeah.
Burn it all down, but leave the comedy club till last.
Yeah. So the Fed material, if anybody cares, is on, it's on some album. It's on Stages, and then some of it's on the new one, which is just Tom Simmons comedy. So the stuff, the God stuff's on that one. And it's weird because it got written in Stages and it's never, there's no place where it's all complete one big chunk of material, you know?
Is that your website, Tom Simmons Comedy?
It is, but they should go to Facebook. I'm actually thinking of updating my website by getting rid of it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like who uses it? Who uses the website, really?
Sure.
You can find us on Instagram or, you know, or, yeah, or everywhere
else. Become a dead medium for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again, man. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, everybody. This is Tom Simmons, Comedians with Issues, episode 1. Come back and listen again.
Oh, see ya.